Welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless Your Boys podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Day. I guess now the new managing editor of Bless Your Boys.
Hey!
Yep. So first podcast with me running the show. So far, I haven't crashed into anything yet. So we're good there. And with me is our associate editor and writer, Ashley McLennan. Ashley, how are we doing tonight?
I'm great. I think what people don't realize is that in order for you to take over as the managing editor of the site, Rob pitted us against each other in a cage match and you destroyed me. So I think that, you know, it's well earned. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah. No, it was like when the Joker snaps the pool cue in half and throws it down in front of the two gang members and tells him he has one open spot.
Very similar. There can be only one, and yep. You are our intrepid Highlander of the masthead.
Oh, thanks.
So congratulations. Very well deserved, obviously.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm stoked.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know, for people out there, like, not a whole lot is going to change right away, but over time, I'm sure we'll have some new ideas and some new things to try. We're glad Rob is still going to be with us too, because Rob is an awesome resource and has taught us both a whole bunch. So you're just getting the best of the both worlds. It's just, I don't know. I just wore Rob down with super, super long articles that he had to edit until he was finally like, oh, here, you edit everything.
You can't handle it anymore. Yeah. We don't need 3,000 words on Nomar Mazara.
Yeah.
It's just too much, Brandon.
Not yet, anyway. Yeah.
soon the time will come.
Yeah. So it's been a super eventful week. I mean, we have like a whole like rack of non-Tigers topics, let alone all the Tigers topics. But the Tigers off to a 3-3 start, doing their usual thing, coming out, you know, hot relative to what you might expect from them. I've been joking that they have a long history now of being great until tax day. Which is, of course, April 15th in the U.S. Ashley, you probably know that already because you pay taxes on like three continents or something.
No, sorry. We're just going to clear that up. I only pay taxes in Canada.
Oh, okay.
Thankfully, I have what is referred to as an international tax identification number.
So interesting.
Social security number. I have that. And what it basically means is, because there's an agreement, this is so boring and I'm sorry to everybody, but there's an agreement between the US and Canada. The US has such agreements between a bunch of different countries that say, basically, if I'm paying tax in my country, I don't have to pay it in your country.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So yes, I do get paid a lot. Like, I'd say a third of my income probably comes from American sources.
Yeah.
But I don't have to pay tax in America because I claim it as foreign income and then I pay the taxes on it here, which is incredibly painful, I guarantee you. And I don't like it one bit. And I'm sure I'll cry when that $5,000 bill hits. But I should just learn to save money better. So
Right.
I know better by now, but I still don't prepare myself ever. And
I always like I always have this idea that I'm going to like take the money through the year and invest it and then double it. And then I'll have that extra, but then you just end up paying more tax anyway. So, you know, in the end you're screwed anyway.
And I have to get a new roof, which is what's happening with my tax money. So I'll just pay the rest throughout the course of the year. Anyway, tax season for us is the end of the month. End of August.
Oh, okay. But if the Tigers can keep this going to bring this back, is that they've moved the tax day to May 15th this year. So maybe we'll get a break and they'll be good for 6 weeks this time. I don't know. That's been my line whenever I do a radio interview lately.
I think what it is true that we can say is that they've been fun to watch so far.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that's been sorely missing. And something I'm really excited to see right out of the gate this year is that, you know, the young players are fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's what we predicted, is just that, you know, don't expect the record to change that much, you know, but it's just a much more watchable team, like having the prospects up, Tarik Skubal and Casey Mize going out there and both having good outings right from the start, get you all tingly, like, oh, if we had just signed some bat, like, I don't know, Trevor Story, like maybe this team could, you know, be a 500 team. But of course,
I think even Matt early. Boyd has been like an exciting kind of surprise. So.
Yeah. Yep. I don't, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know that he's given up a home run yet.
I don't think he has. Michael Fulmer out of the pen has been a very intriguing new development that I'm not mad about.
Yep, absolutely. Like, you know, he's kind of got like that closer mentality type guy anyway. And seeing him throw 95, 96, like the velocity's coming back. So yeah, you never know. Maybe he works his way back into the rotation, but maybe this is the best thing for him. So
yeah, maybe he's just a really good reliever.
Yep.
And there's definitely a place for that and a market for it. So
yep, absolutely. Like, you know, we've only got him for this year and next year. So, I mean, if you move him back to being a starter, what if it takes some time to adjust and you diminish his trade value or whatever that way? Yeah. But yeah, it's just, I mean, he's just a very likable person. So is Matt Boyd, obviously, but Fulmer's just kind of the guy, you know, like he just, you know, he's just a big, burly, fastball throwing machine. So yeah, it's good to see him out there healthy and effective. His changeup has been really good too. So, I mean, if it does come to him going back to the rotation, it looks like his slider and his changeup may be better than ever. So hopefully the fastball will catch up and we'll see what we got there. But yeah, he's pitched well. Daniel Norris did not pitch all that well. Derek Holland did not pitch all that well. Had one bad blow up from the bullpen, but it was set up by Jose Ureña just kind of just being a disaster that one day.
Yeah, which is kind of disappointing because I liked what I saw from him in spring training in like the cautious optimism field of things. So I was expecting a little bit more from him than the total self-destruction.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bit of a bummer.
Yeah, the stuff is pretty good. Like, he does seem like he gets wild sometimes, but he didn't do much of a job like correcting himself at all during that outing. So I assume we'll see better. He's got a long track record, so it can't be that bad.
Probably. Gregory Soto has dazzled with his new hair.
Yep, yep. And some people yelled at him apparently about it being purple and not tiger orange, and he listened to the people. Yeah.
Were they worried it was too Rockies themed? Like, the purple is pretty, you know, safe color for the most part, but
it looked good. I like the kind of red. It was, I guess it was sort of like crimson almost, but but yeah, it looked pretty good.
I did love the one pitch that he threw that has now been gift to all eternity, which was like, it was the most Nuke LaLoosh thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh yeah.
Just rocketing off into the sun and nowhere near the strike zone. What a thing of beauty that was.
Yeah. What was great was watching like all the StatCast guys and Pitching Ninja, like tracking it. Like there was a little 98 on the velocity, but it was like way up in the stands.
Way up. Yeah. That was really good. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just have to laugh at them because that's just spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to do something that wrong.
Yeah. In like that's some 50 cent or level avoidance of the strike zone. It was perfection.
Yep. And so, yeah, we've had moments like that. And then from day one, we had the snow game. With Miguel Cabrera driving one out to right field in the snow, couldn't see that it had actually cleared the fence or not because it bounced back into the field, executes a magnificent pop-up slide into second base, and then looks at the umpire and he tells him it's a home run, and Miguel goes, okay, thank you, and then runs the rest of the way. Okay, which, thank you is such a hilarious reaction to that to me for some reason.
Which, if you think about it, is like, it's just a real world. I mean, obviously the scene out of Moneyball is real world as well, but like it just reminds you of that scene in the film room in Moneyball where the guy like goes clawing his way back to second base because he doesn't realize he's hit a home run.
Oh yeah, Jeremy Brown. Yeah.
And it's just that like perfect, like, that how can you not be romantic about baseball? Like there's a blizzard, it's Miguel Cabrera, it's opening day, first home run of the season.
Yep.
And it's just like, you don't get any better than that. It's just like perfect and it's cinematic, and what a great start to the season.
Yeah, it was cinematic. Yeah, there were some amazing like little slow-mo shots of that and pictures. And of course, everyone wanting a snow globe. You know, everyone wants to make
Globe now.
So I was hassling Tigers PR on behalf of everyone, like, hey, this is, you know, you guys should
run one of these up. Should have. What a great idea that would be. Oh my God.
Yeah,
I loved it. I don't know if you follow on Instagram the Mini MLB account, which is my new favorite thing in the world.
Mini MLB.
And all they do is they Photoshop MLB players to be real tiny, with like giant, comically oversized heads, so that they look like teeny tiny children, and then they'll leave everybody else in the scene and everything else normal sized. And it is the most tremendous thing I've ever seen, but they did that for the Miggy home run, and it's just like teeny tiny Miggy in the snow. If you've never seen that Instagram channel, I highly recommend it because it's adorable.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that kind of sounds like the baseball version of the Owl Kitty account, which is basically just this guy who edits his black cat into Hollywood movies.
Oh my god,
great.
Following that immediately.
Oh, you're gonna waste a good hour just on that. I mean, it's amazing. There's some really good, you know, photo artists and video artists out there who are putting their talents to use for pure nonsense. And we are here for that. Absolutely. At all times.
Oh man, this is going to be epic. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
Done this to yourself.
This I mean, this is an extremely charismatic cat as well. So yeah. Yeah. She's a star. What else do we got? We got some things that are not non-tigerish, like Robbie Grossman going out there and just, you know, getting on base just relentlessly, just walking 2, 3, 4 times a game. That's been kind of cool. Nico's had a couple good games after looking god awful in spring training, mm-hmm. So that's encouraging. Tarik Skubal was amazing. Skubal if Tarik Skubal could throw 160 innings this year, he's your rookie of the year candidate. But he's probably not going to get a chance.
Are you sure?
I actually
160 innings. Yeah, I grant.
And yeah.
Obviously, small sample size is incredibly at play with my. Are you sure?
I am all in. I am all in with Tarik Skubal at this point. Tarik
Skubal.
I have to keep checking my pronunciation guide.
Which I can't read them. I can't read the Rays did such a great job this year. They did an audio version.
Oh, that's great.
The players saying their own names.
Yeah.
Not like somebody telling you, is the player saying it. And my absolute favorite part of that entire thing, it's online if you want to search for it. So anybody can hear this, but it's Ryan Yarbrough doing his, because I want it as like a ringtone because it's Ryan Yarbrough. Like he says it as a question. I'm just like, is that how we're technically supposed to pronounce your name, Yarbs? Like
it's supposed Yarbrough? To be, it's always a question. Eh?
Makes me very happy.
That's great. Yeah, because sometimes, you know, you see it like they do a bad job spelling it out phonetically and it's just worse. Like it just more confusing.
Yeah. And that's a huge thing for me, is that sometimes those like phonetic pronunciations, I'm just like, wait, do you mean this or do you mean this? Because I say that like this.
Yeah. I mean, and one way or the other, Isaac is just going to take time. Like I have to stop. I have to pause before I say it every time.
More complicated this year, hasn't he?
Yep. He's added to it.
It's like it's a three syllable intro now, I think, instead of like Isak, it's Isaac.
Yeah. Yep.
Question mark?
Yeah. Or you kind of blur it together like Isak. You just have to drag out the sock and then you're okay.
No matter what we're doing, they were adding a question mark to the end. So I think that's just the new hotness in terms of pronunciation elements.
Exactly. So Mr. Paredes, if you're out there, we apologize in advance.
We can't say anybody's name right, so don't take it personally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we can barely pronounce our own some days, you know.
It's true. It's
asking too much. So, yeah, I mean, 3-3, not bad. The Tigers are now going on the road trip for 10 games, I think. So this is where it's going to get kind of gnarly, and we'll start to see what this team is made of. But we have had, like, a couple of interesting plays. Just in the last game against the Twins, the two calls, you know, like, well, we don't know if they were Chip Hale sending people home or not, but Willy Castro coming around on a Miguel Cabrera double all the way from first base, gets set home. The relay from Jake Cave in left field comes into Andrelton Simmons. Andrelton Simmons guns him down by a hair. So there were some people debating that one. And then, of course, I expected very much that this was Miguel Cabrera doing this on his own. Miguel Cabrera goes and tries to tag up at third and score on a like barely medium depth fly ball to right and is thrown out by a good, you know, 10 to 15 feet.
Yeah.
So we had those. There's been a lot of discussion about both of those, but AJ Hinch has made it really clear, like he wants them to be aggressive. And we've heard that, you know, Brad Ausmus wants his players to be aggressive. You know, Ron Gardenhire wants their players to be aggressive. But then both of them also will say, like, but we also want to play really smart, you know, solid fundamental baseball and not make mistakes, which is when you realize that it's all just talk, because you can't do both those things. If you're going to be aggressive, you are going to make mistakes. And you just hope that more often than that, then you make the right call on the 50-50 plays, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think so. And I think what was interesting, and I remember in the Ausmus era, especially in spring training, when he was really like, we're going to be aggressive on base running. And you could see it in the spring training games. Like the steal attempts were up, the successful steals were up. It was really fun to watch those games because you're like, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
The second you hit the regular season, it was gone. I'm like, well, where's the aggressive base path running that we saw? Where's the steals? Where's this promise of like a more aggressive and enthusiastic club? And I think that, yeah, Gardy's never somebody I would have called aggressive in pretty much anything except his sense of humor. and so I think that we're actually seeing it without the generic quotes about it, right?
Yeah.
You're not getting the promise of something, you're just getting action. And oh my God.
Yeah, here come the cats. I can see them. Can't see Mr. Nutmeg if you're listening to the podcast, but he is a very handsome orange and white striped cat. And he looks like he's bound for some mischief. It's currently 10:40 Eastern time as we're recording. And it's the witching hour for cats. They're
he's both got there. The giant pupils going.
He does.
He's gonna be annoying.
Yeah, but he's got a little bit of the crazy eye.
He does have the crazy eye. If I look at him too long, he gets what I lovingly refer to as airplane ears too, which is like the back ear.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, but Dottie is we should just record these on video one day. Dottie is perfectly settled on top of my printer.
Yeah.
Which is her happy place.
Yeah, she looks like a working cat. Like you can get some stuff done.
She is. That's where she sits all day when I'm at work. Right. Absolutely all day. She is a staple in all of my team's calls.
Well, I'm glad the cats made an appearance somehow. That makes me happy.
Yeah, it's our first time doing this on Zoom, so it's
yeah exactly. We have switched over to Zoom now, so if the audio sounds any different, that would be why. Probably
it's that, and I've actually invested in a real microphone. Oh, so yeah. Congratulations to all of us for the audio quality.
Here we go, we're investing in you, the listener. How about that? So yeah, it just comes back to whether or not, you know, the first time a manager reacts to one of those type of plays where a guy is too aggressive and blows it, you know, that I assume just kind of sets the tone. Like if you immediately are like, okay, I want you to be aggressive, but not in that situation,
not this way,
then pretty soon like it all goes out the window, and baseball players naturally just fall back on their instincts once the season starts to grind on you. You know, unless there's someone in your ear about it and you guys are all really working it together, you're just going to fall back on what you know. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, he definitely seems much more committed to the aggressive thing. The other thing is pulling the infield in. Like they've pulled the infield in with guys at third, you know, every single time, and it's worked. And I hate that play personally. Like there are certain circumstances where it makes good sense, and I'm sure AJ Hinch knows better than me. So I'm willing to let it roll and see how it goes, but it just feels like the odds of you know, someone blowing a play, even when it's hit right at them, when they're that close, you know, goes through the roof. So we'll see, but Jamer Candelario handled one really well. Jonathan Scope handled one really well. And maybe best of all, the catcher in both circumstances caught and held onto the ball and made the tag. Something our former friend James McCann always struggled to do. And I saw him blow one just the other day with the Mets, and everyone was on his case. And I was like, oh, here we go.
This is the old friend over there. We know that play pretty well. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's been interesting. I think, are you a ban the shift kind of guy, or are you like pro shift? What's your shift take in general?
I don't really want to ban the shift. I mean, I try to just keep it simple. Like any solution that they can find to, you know, let more balls fall in. Like, I think that we probably do need that. I don't want them moving the pitching mound back. I don't want them messing with anything crazy like that. My suggestion is always like, I just want outfield to be bigger. But of course, that's a bit more of an undertaking than banning the shift.
Yeah.
So I would rather not ban the shift. Like, I guess if they want to do something where they're like, okay, you have to have, you know, two guys on both sides of second base, fine. And, you know, I guess you can kind of work within that somehow and maybe get creative. Like the Tigers, it looked like they were setting up a wall on a penalty kick in soccer, you know, the other day. You know, you got a lefty at the plate and a man on third, and you got three guys like all in a row.
Yeah. I like weird baseball, man. I like it when you have the opportunity to try different things like that, where it's not all right, well, this guy's in his zone. I like the idea of being able to do something unique. It doesn't always work.
Yep.
I think that the Tigers for the longest time, especially, have been really stuck in a very strict pattern of how things are done. Yeah. And I think that that's really how Rodden Gardenhire worked, is that he understood baseball in a certain way. And it was kind of an old school way. And I'm definitely not saying AJ Hinch is a new school guy, because that's absolutely not the vibe I get from him whatsoever. But I think he's more willing to try things that are slightly outside the box. And that gives me a little bit of faith that whether or not this is a better than 70 win season, we're at least going to see experimentation and new things tried.
Yeah.
That they haven't done before. And I think that in and of itself will be really beneficial.
Yeah. And I mean, I think AJ Hinch is pretty, I mean, he's like, he tries to balance them both. Like, you know, the things we think of as new school have kind of become commonplace. Like everybody shifts now, even Ron Gardenhire, you know, shifted a lot at the end when he was, you know, the Tigers manager. Obviously he didn't do much of that with the Twins, yeah. But that's almost become orthodox.
At shift this point. I'd say is just standard at this point. Absolutely.
Yeah. But crashing home plate, you know, and some of the things, I guess what it comes down to is if you get your guys to play aggressively and you just let them keep doing it, knowing that the season doesn't matter that much, you should get better. It's like practicing something at full speed, you know, rather than like trying to like work on the individual, you know, bits slowly in some controlled way. You kind of just have to play with abandon enough to hopefully get better at doing it that way. So yeah, I guess we'll just, you know, we'll keep track. The thing that, I mean, this happens to everybody, but it happens to fans, I think, especially when you only watch some games, is that you'll always notice when a guy gets thrown out trying to go home. And you won't notice when they took the extra base as much, or, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, you notice the failures. You don't notice when that was an actual risk that was a 50-50 play off, and it paid off. Yeah. So that's something for people to keep in mind. The other thing, like in terms of pitching, like he has these little mantras that I really like the race to two strikes. I heard a whole bunch of the pitchers use that phrase this spring. And so you knew it came from AJ. And then I think John Nyo at the Detroit News or Free Press, I can't remember which one, wrote something and had that kind of as the lead. And I like that philosophy too. You know, it's that's what it is. Like for your hitters, you know, you can take rips until there's two strikes on you. So, you know, as long as you can hang in there, I'm fine with you, you know, swinging away. But then when you get in that situation, you've got to be, you know, willing to cool it down, shorten up, put the ball in play. Whereas from the pitchers, he wants you to, you know, he wants you to pound the zone with first pitch strikes. That's the only time that the hitter hasn't seen your stuff right there, you know, in the last few minutes. And you should take advantage. And Matt Boyd did yesterday. That was an outstanding Matt Boyd start. And he did really it. I think he threw 74% first pitch strikes and did it with a lot of off speed pitches too. So we'll see if that kind of thing keeps up as well.
Yeah, it was nice to see that Matt Boyd again, and we'll kind of see where that goes. Obviously, we're speaking from a week, literally a week of games.
Yep, two starts for Matt Boyd, but
so it's hard to know kind of where the truth lies. But man, it's not been disheartening. I'll say that.
Yeah, definitely, especially after like the last, you know, last season and the second half of 2019, like he just could not pitch like this. Like it just did not happen. So
not for a guy that's that focused on his skills, right? Like,
yeah,
I think that you can have the guys out there who they exist, who just are like, oh, this is what I do and it's my mechanics and off I go. But Matt Boyd is one of those obsessives. He's one of those people that wants to tinker and tweak and adjust and figure out what's wrong and figure out what's right and work on that. And I think it had to be just as frustrating for him to be in that position as anybody watching him, because he knows he's better than that.
Yeah.
And we've seen him be better than that. So I think that if they've figured out the key to that, then we're at least in line to kind of see something positive this year.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, we're not, you know, proposing that Matt Boyd will suddenly turn into the number two starter that, you know, there was a brief window where it looked like maybe something like that was possible. But if he's just a solid back end starter, that, you know, that would be perfectly fine. That's all we kind of need. We have Tarik Skubal now and Casey Mize. So,
yeah, I mean, if Matt Boyd wants to go out and win like 12 games this year and just have like an above 500 average in general and just be good, I'm happy with that.
Yep. And he was, you know, and he was also just so efficient in that one. Like he got to the sixth inning, you know, going into the lineup the third time. And I think he was at like 60 some pitches or something at that point. That's, you know, good things will happen when you just keep throwing strikes and mix in all your pitches. And he was using his changeup and his slider more, which I think is the other thing going forward, is to the fastball is not that great. So yeah, throw the secondary pitches more. That's become the standard thing. And yeah, we'll see kind of what he gets. But we're really beating around the bush here, because of course the bush is Akil Baddoo. Who has had the most, I mean, like statistically and historically, one of the craziest, you know, first three or four games ever in all of baseball history.
Yeah, it was in Tigers history for sure. I think they were saying like he's one of only four players to like since modern baseball began for the Tigers to have like the kind of level of start that he's had, and like it's ludicrous. I think we all kind of saw that first plate appearance, first pitch, first home run. Like, come on, that's storybook with his parents up. And that, okay, I'm gonna go out on a tangent, but like last season was rough for any kind of rookie or prospect coming up because nobody was in the stands. So you had all these kind of like really depressing stories about like parents driving all the way to the stadium just to be in a car outside the stadium, or like be in a, you know, a place nearby where they could listen to the game and then like yell at their kid from 20 feet away in the parking lot afterwards without having been able to see it. And I think that you really saw the emotional impact of that when you saw Akil Baddoo's parents reacting to that home run, because it was just beautiful. Like it was like his mom was doubled over, his dad was applauding. It was the cutest thing I've ever seen. Like,
Yeah, they're double high-fiving.
yeah, like I've not seen a parent I've loved that instantly since Jacoby Jones's mom came on.
Oh yeah, she was cool.
But like, yeah, it was just like it was a magic, like cinematic moments all over the place this past week. That Miggy home run, then the Akil Baddoo like first pitch home
First
run.
pitch of your
Like, come
major league
on,
career. Yep.
man.
And then
What a way to do it.
comes out the next game and bam, grand slam in a game that we were losing, but hit it almost to the exact same spot in this opposite
Yeah.
field, like burst of power has been pretty cool. And then yeah, walks it off and gets the shower, you know, a
Yeah,
couple
what
days
a
later.
guy. Like, it's just the things that he's been able to accomplish in the first week of his major league career are things that take other players like years into their career to get their first grand slam, to
Some
get.
people wait a lifetime, Ashley,
So
for a
I
moment like okay, I'm sorry.
no, absolutely not. Although I grant you this, the entire way to work today, I was singing the Scooby-Doo theme song, but with Akil Baddoo's name in it.
Oh yeah.
And I was just going, Akil Baddoo, who are you? We need some help from you now. And I'm just, that was my ride to work today.
It
So,
does help to have a super catchy name. I mean,
yeah.
it is just a super catchy name. And I saw on Twitter earlier, I think Roger Castillo from Motor City Bengals tweeted it out that Urca Badu had seen it, you know, the highlight reel, and like, you know, tweeted like thumbs up or something like that about it.
So
So, yeah, it was
cute.
funny.
Yeah, Badu support across the board. But no, I mean, like, it's obviously all anybody can think about when they're thinking about the Tigers right now is the Akil Baddoo start. Like, yes, we have these incredible prospects up in the pitching staff. And yes, there's all sorts of, you know, AJ Hinch's first season back. There's so many stories. But the only one anybody wants to talk about is Akil Baddoo for good reason, because that's baseball magic. That's, you know, this Rule 5 pickup. Does it against the team that let him go? Like,
I mean, it's a reporter's dream. Like, not just his dream, but like anybody who writes about baseball is just like, oh my God, this is gold. And yeah, and fan bases, like all fan bases, like in our SB Nation Slack channel, you know, there's people who write about all 30 teams and everyone wants to talk about Akil Baddoo. So
oh, the
yeah,
gift
they're all coming.
sharing is huge. It's yeah, they're like just the chanting of the name, the can he do it? He did it. The enthusiasm for him as a rookie is just incredible.
Yeah, that's another
And
cool thing about, you know, having the fans back is that all of a sudden now we also have like this chant going, you know, like
yeah.
with this Lou offshoot with the Badu chants, which is also cool. It's so nice to have the fans back, honest to God. Not just
It's
because we want to go to a game, but also just because it just felt so weird and cold last year. It
Just
was
nice
odd.
to see people like posting pictures of their nachos and their beer and like just pictures of like distanced fans, people who generally speaking have no idea how to wear a mask. I'm gonna be that person, but it goes over your nose, my friends. If you wear it underneath your nose, you shouldn't be wearing it at all. There's no point.
But we've also gotten a couple fan catches, you know, dudes holding nachos and like catching
Yeah.
it and not spilling anything. All that minutia, all that little pageantry that goes on around the game. You don't realize how much you miss it,
I
and it has
was
been nice.
watching the Rays play in Boston earlier this week, and I'll tell you what I did not miss about fans in the stadium. It is Loud Bros in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Love nothing more than to start chants sitting right next to the live feed microphone.
Oh, yeah.
Do not miss those guys. But generally speaking, yes, I think it's tremendous to have fans back in the stadium.
Yeah. And if we can get more fans back in the stadium later on, it will drown those bros out.
Although I'm
back
not
to their proper level.
I'm not yet ready for like Texas Rangers levels of fans back in the stadium.
Yeah.
Because, oh boy, seeing pictures of that full stadium gave me so much anxiety.
Yeah, that was a little much for sure. Yeah.
Like, I am not ready for that. I need a good 10 feet between me and whoever's next to me, and I'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all. Just a little space. Like, I, you know, even right now, if Comerica like doubled the amount of people in there, I'd be okay with it. But other than that, let's just chill out, everybody, for another, you know, 2 months. Let's this thing settle down, get the vaccinations rolling. Fortunately, I was happy to see the Tigers all went and got vaccinated the day after opening day on their off day. That was great because it's something that you just don't have to worry so much about now. We've had Spencer Turnbull and Chris Vetter out. The opening series for the Nationals and the Mets, you know, basically got washed because a couple of people on the Nationals weren't taking the proper precautions and, got
five
popped.
Cases, I think.
Yeah. Yep. And they were kind of tied to people who were kind of known to be like sort of, being dumb about it. So yeah, at least the Tigers didn't involve themselves in any of that.
Did the whole team go?
That's what I read. I mean, they didn't necessarily like specify that all.
Well, they're not going to list everybody,
right? They can't do that. But it sounded like everybody was in. So
nice.
Yeah,
it's good to and I mean, like, to take a small tangent because it is topical. I really liked what the Yankees have been doing, where they're like posting very pro vaccine. Like content, which I think is good, and it's kind of hilarious to see it balanced out by the Mets, who are like, "Well, I'm not going to talk about that." Like, it's like, I mean, you could, guys.
So was that weird? Yeah, Peter Alonso did like,
Peter Alonso, like,
but he also wouldn't say whether or not he
didn't want to talk about it. But meanwhile, you've got like Max Scherzer going, "I'll do whatever Fauci tells me to do."
Yeah, and Max Scherzer is a smart, analytical type dude, and
he says I believe science, so I thought that was very nice.
Like, even if you don't believe science, you have to believe science over just random nonsense. You know, like, science isn't perfect, but it's way better than everything else.
I mean, we're way behind everything in Canada right now. Like, it's bonkers how slow the rollout's going, but the last thing I'll say about it is that my mom gets hers tomorrow.
That's all I
care about. So
yeah, my folks got it back in late February, early March. And yeah, that was just a huge relief because they're the only people I've really seen a lot of in close quarters for a year now. And, you know, just living in terror of like giving your elderly parents this. And I mean, that freaked me out more than anything. I didn't really thought that much about myself other than, you know, making sure to wear the mask in stores and at work and stuff. But I've felt just a weight come off. Yes. It felt a lot lighter. And now that we have baseball again, I feel lighter still. And it's been like 80 the past 2 days. The Tigers went from playing in 30 degree snow to 80 degrees 5 days later because Michigan.
Bless Michigan. Classic Michigan.
It was.
It's chilly here, obviously, but it's nice. It's like signs of spring. Like, things feel normal again, even though they're not normal. Like, just to be able to watch games in April is such a huge treat.
Yeah.
And to be able to, like, I feel like, and this is getting past the Tigers and more into general baseball, I feel like they've given us so much delightfully weird baseball in the past week that it's like the baseball gods are making up for lost time. Like, in the span of a week, we've had a cat on a field, poor Coors cat.
Yep.
We've had, somebody was pickpocketing somebody else today in that Marlins-Mets game, which was brilliant.
It was Jesus Aguilar.
Yeah. We had
pickpocketing someone at first base. Yeah.
The absolute weirdness of that Mets-Marlins like game-ending situation. We've had extra innings games. We've had, we had a mid-game manicure break for one of the catchers of one of the teams. I can't remember even at this point who it was.
Oh, yeah. Needed his nail polish put back on.
Yeah. We had Cody Bellinger surpassing Justin Turner on the base paths and turning a home run into a single.
Oh, God.
so much good, weird baseball in a week.
Yeah, the kind of stuff that just exposes all the, like, sort of strange rules that almost never come up. Yeah, the one today, Michael Conforto, like, I don't know, if I wouldn't say he necessarily leaned into a pitch.
But he did not lean away.
And it was a strike, and it hit him, which is criminal that that is considered a hit by pitch. Like, for me, like, if the ball doesn't enter the batter's box, there should be no hit by pitches. Like, you know, that's your turf. Everything else should be the pitcher's turf. But of course, I come from the pitching perspective. So
the rules of it too, I think, are like, if it's in that zone, you have to make a concerted effort to avoid it. And he absolutely did not.
Yeah.
And I watched that clip 1,000 times and I'm still not convinced he was actually hit by it.
Yeah. It was like a double nick sound. Yeah. It was hard to tell. Yeah.
Which reminds me, there was a great one of a catch going off the Green Monster the other day that was ruled a catch, even though you could hear it clang against the monster in the game.
Yeah.
And then he caught it. And I'm like, no, that was a rebound, but they ruled it a catch. I was furious.
Yeah. People were trying to say that, like, you know, if you catch the ball and your mitt with the ball in it hits the wall, it makes the exact same sound. And then there was this whole hilarious debate about the different tonalities of the ball versus the ball in the glove sound against the monster. I was like, if people done research on this, but yeah, it's just that kind of like weird plays have been pretty abundant. Yeah.
So it does feel to me like baseball's kind of making up for lost time, and it's delightful because I love all that weird nonsense.
Yep.
And it makes it feel like, I just love those updates. I love seeing stupid GIFs of things. I love seeing, you know, hey, this random record got broken today, or like this happened. And it's just, it feels so nice to have weird baseball back.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just all those little details are so much fun to have, you know, hash out. And, you know, we've had some former Tigers kind of mashed up into some of these shenanigans as well. I just want to mention to everybody out there, like, Jose Iglesias has made like 6 of the greatest plays of his career all within like the last 3 weeks for the LA Angels. And it is one hell of a highlight reel. Like, he actually reenacted the play he made behind Doug Fister in 2013, like the real legendary one where he was, you know, laying out, diving and pick and scoop the ball to first base, you know, all in one motion. He did it basically again. It wasn't quite as crazy, but it was pretty close.
And what's so incredible about the show he's putting on over there is how overshadowed it is, because you've got the Shohei Ohtani experience happening, like playing both roles in one game. You've got Mike Trout, who's adjusting the faults in his swing.
Yeah.
I think he hit like a 500-foot home run tonight.
Yep.
Like,
destroyed it.
Yeah, because he's just like, I'm working some things out that, like, in spring training, he said it. He's like, you know, there's been some things, some mechanics in my swing that just weren't quite right. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. You can be better.
Yeah, scary.
And it's already looking scary. Like, he's like, I'm close. I've almost got it figured out. And I'm like, oh, God help us all.
Yep. and Ohtani in his debut, he threw the fastest pitch of the season to that point, and he also hit the hardest exit velocity on any ball off the bat for a home run in the same game. Like, has anyone ever been this talented? Like, Babe Ruth did not throw 100. I mean, I know he's a better hitter than Ohtani probably, but I mean, the combined skill set is just something I don't think has ever existed really before. And I just hope we get, you know, a couple years of him being able to do both at this level, because it is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I mean, we've all been really excited for the Shohei Ohtani, you know, show. But obviously he's had injuries. Things have limited his ability to let that kind of shine. And I think we're really just now seeing what he can do. And oh, boy, is exciting.
Yeah, like, you better take care of Shohei Ohtani, Joe Madden.
Huh? Don't hurt him.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I mean, that's been nuts. And then we've had Nick Castellanos, who has become swag destroyer of worlds, just mashing home runs, getting into scraps, got hit by a pitch the other day. I can't remember. It was a Cardinals pitcher, and it was a rookie of some ilk. I can't remember his name. But anyway, Nick gets hit, goes to first base, you know, kind of gives him a look, but no big deal. Ultimately comes around and scores on a bang bang play at the plate, and he and the pitcher end up it was a wild pitch. He throws it to the pitcher, and the pitcher basically catches it and lands on Nick Castellanos. Nick gets up and like flexes in his face and is all like, let's go.
Yeah,
and of course
he does the big roar, right? Like,
And of course, Yachty has to, I guess, defend his rookie pitcher slash be the cop in the situation and kind of get on his case. And, you know, so we had our first, general bench show clear. Of posturing.
Yeah.
Our posture fest. So yeah, everybody came out and got into that. And then Nick, of course, like, you know, had a whole bunch of just mint quotes in the post game where he said, you know, hey, you know, whatever happened, you know, I respect Yadier or Molina, you know, to no end, you know, just like if he punched me in the face, I'd still ask him to sign a jersey for me after the game and stuff, which diffused everybody completely. Like, all right, fine.
The Reds have had such good ones. I have to find the Amir Garrett quote.
Oh, Amir Garrett. Yeah. He's another one who was a lot of fun.
Oh God. What a great quote that was. He wants them to be known as the cockiest team ever. It was such a good quote. He's like, we're some bat flipping showboating son of a guns. And I want everyone to know that.
Yep.
Oh gosh. I mean, the Reds are one of those teams where you really want them to do well. Like they always have the parts of success that they just seem to fall short of achieving it. And so I love the Reds as kind of an underdog team. And I'm sure in 10 years, they'll be like the new Cardinals of that division. And I'll have to stop considering them underdogs, but like,
yeah,
man,
but maybe they won't be as annoying, because to me, the Cardinals are just annoying. Like that's the team that just like thinks way too highly of themselves. You know, that they're always baseball's police in some way. Not a fan.
If you ever, ever want to hate your entire life, say anything on Twitter about how you don't think Yadi is a first round.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. The best fan base in baseball will come and get you, carry you away. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. The worst mistake you could ever make. And I've done it.
Yeah. And then we also had Shohei Ohtani get hit, and he also had like a bit of a look out toward the pitcher. And I was thinking like, oh, what if Ohtani charged the mound? Like, I mean, he is a giant, menacing individual when he wants to be. That would have been crazy, but it just, there was something about him right now that just looks like he's playing with a little bit of fire too. Like Mike Trout hit that home run the other day, and Ohtani like turned around and waved it goodbye and stuff like that.
Oh, bless. It's so good.
Just feeling himself a little bit, which is fun. I love it. I love so the whole great. Thing. I got into some arguments about the Nick Castellanos stuff, and you know, I was just like, you know, nothing.
I can't believe they suspended him for two games.
I know, for yelling in the pitcher's face for a second, you know, after getting plunked,
after getting plunked
on purpose.
Come on.
Yeah. And, you know, and it was Yadier Molina who's the one. Nick was walking away. He like grabbed him by the back of the neck and kind of dragged him back. Does Yadi get any punishment? No. So, yeah, it was just, I don't know. I think back to the Omar Little quote from The Wire all the time with Nick, and it's just like, it's all in the game, baby. You know, you can get mad. I'm going to play with swag. You guys can be mad about it. It's all fine. As long as nobody gets hurt. I love all of it. You know, I am fine with a little bit of saltiness.
Yeah.
I'm fine with, you know, people getting mad. I'm also fine with people bat flipping and, you know, having a blast. I'm fine with pitchers, you know, being fired up like Gregory Soto was the other day when he, completed his second inning of work and punched the dude out, let out a little roar. That's great.
What it is in the case of the suspension is that MLB did say before the season, when they just announced their new COVID protocols, they're like, there will be stricter like punishments, stricter repercussions.
Yeah.
For fights.
And for being the instigator.
So I think what it is that under normal circumstances, I think that nothing would have happened there. I think there would have been a stern talking to from the umpire the next inning when it started. Nobody would have been punished because there was no punches thrown. There was no violence.
Yeah.
It was just a lot of guys in each other's faces and nothing happened. But I think what that is.
The usual. Just, yeah.
What it was really just them kind of showing that they're serious in terms of not wanting that in your face kind of interaction. And I guess it makes sense, but at the same time, it's like, my dude, he just bounced up and roared a little at a guy. Like, let him enjoy that moment.
Yeah. It feels a lot like the usual, like we want players to have fun and express themselves until they do. And then we don't, you know, and then someone gets, you know, sore about it. And has to bring the hammer down. You know, they want it to be flashy,
but no, not like that.
But not like that. Yeah. Oh no, not like that.
Yeah, be so, appealing to a younger generation, but not like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Make baseball fun, but not like that.
I guess we'd have to talk about the sad side real quickly, just because there have been, before we talk about the sad side, we should also talk about the fan, just the A's fans giving the Astros the business.
Stages that this went in, because I mean, it was one, the first live booing.
Yep.
That we got back in over a year, which was. Yep.
They finally get their chance to see the Astros in person and all three of them who are still left who are actually involved. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got live booing, which was tremendous. And then during a game, somebody threw an inflatable garbage can onto the field.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, that's great. But then a couple innings later, somebody threw an actual garbage can onto the field, which I mean, like, guys, let's draw the line. That's dangerous. Let's not hurt people.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's my favorite part, because that's ludicrous to advance ourselves from inflatable garbage can, which where do you even find that?
Yeah, I didn't know that was an item.
Yeah, I know. Like, that was a much sought after thing.
They should be selling those in the A's, in the really pro shop. Yeah.
To an actual garbage can, which like really does take commitment if you think about it, because garbage cans are only up at the top of the stairs in so somebody had to get past whoever was standing at the top of the stairs, bring an entire garbage can all the way down to a point where you could throw it onto the field. Like, there was real commitment there.
Yeah.
And I almost respected if it wasn't an insane and dangerous thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. We can't condone that part of it, but I like the trolling and the shade being thrown much more than I like, just people like screaming at various Astros who had nothing to do with it. And like the people who are actually like red faced, angry on Twitter about it at this point, it's like, come on now. Like, can you just not, like, if you guys want to boo Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve for the rest of their career, absolutely. That's great. But is George Springer getting booed? It's the whole thing is just kind of stupid.
Correa is not really doing himself any favors.
No, he never does.
He is absolutely leaning in to being the heel of that team.
Yeah.
And there was a run to second base play where they were trying to do a double play and he like elbowed the runner in the face.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a tag out attempt. It was just like this vicious,
like block, this
like body slam. And I'm like, how did that not get a fine or a penalty of some kind? Cause that was not clean baseball. That was an ugly move. And I think that that's the thing, right? Like, he's fed up with being the villain, but he also seems to really relish that villain role.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and he's just and he's cocky too. Like, not necessarily in a bad way. Like, he's just always been like an expressive, like, we're going to win. I expect the most out of myself. We're not backing down to anybody type guy, like a little bit like Castellanos. But obviously, like, Correa being a good defensive shortstop is a better player. But what this is just bothering me about is that I feel like we're going to end up with Carlos Correa. Like, I just feel like he's going to sign here next offseason. And it's
don't put that evil on us.
I'm sorry, but we've already got AJ Hinch, and I fear for this. It's going to be AJ Hinch, Justin Verlander, and Carlos Correa, and we're going to be the Trashkers or something. Yep, I'm not looking forward to that.
The Tigstros.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I don't do that.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Don't say that.
Just I said it here first, folks. That part of it's not going to be fun if it happens.
I go through like phases in my baseball fandom of who my like biggest villain is, and for the longest time it was just no doubt Nelson Cruz.
But that's just baseball villainy, really.
Yeah,
apart from the steroids.
from 2011 through probably like 2016, I was just like, everything in baseball was Nelson Cruz's fault, and I can't hate Nelson Cruz anymore because he's delightful.
Yeah, like, the jerk.
It's so annoying. Like, I fell in love with Nelson Cruz, I think like 2 or 3 years ago during the All-Star game, because he was like live streaming the whole thing on Instagram, having the time of his life. And I'm like, how do you be mad at this guy? Like, how do you get mad at a guy having this much fun with other people's success?
Yeah. And then what did he do? I think it was last night. He there's that meme that's out there where it's like the guy and his wife are sleeping in bed and they're facing the other way. And she's like, I bet he's thinking about other women. And it was, the Tigers have had, you know, 23 different starting pitchers since 2011, and Nelson Cruz continues to just, you know, to just destroy us. And Nelson Cruz retweeted that with like a sad emoji and then also a dying laughing emoji.
Yeah.
I was like, ah, you monster.
I may or may not have an article coming out tomorrow at Fangraphs about that.
Oh, that's the other thing we should be talking about is, yes, that, you know, I'm all full of myself now. I'm the managing editor. I'm supposed to be bumping in you instead.
Yeah, yeah, we could talk about that.
Our new Fangraphs author, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations. That's super
cool.
Thank
you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part-time gig at Fangraphs, working with the cool kids.
Yeah.
Changes absolutely nothing about any of my other jobs because they're not like a non-compete jerk organization of any kind. They're like, you keep doing whatever you're doing.
Yep.
And then they let me pitch ideas like a brief history of Nelson Cruz humiliating the Detroit Tigers.
Yep. Yeah.
So I can
Kind of stuff that's fun to write. Like, you know, just, I like those random, like, individual player things, like, you know, who has the best pickoff move, or, you know, in celebration of just some weird element of the game that we don't talk about, or some, yeah, some player's dominance or utter, you know, failure against one team. All that stuff is great.
I think I want to write something because the other great moment of stupidity this just today was Jock Peterson hitting a home run and then coming back to the Cubs dugout. And like, there's just a picture of him screaming at a waffle maker.
Oh, yeah. I saw that, but I don't know what was going on.
I have to look into it more because apparently it was like a kind of short-lived post celebratory kind of tradition in 2018 that got dropped and is just making its way back. But I think it's related to, like, if you hit a home run, you get a waffle maker, which, cool.
Okay. Yep.
But it really does make me want to look into like the weirdest home run celebrations in dugouts.
Oh yeah.
Like, we've seen coordinated dance moves with the Nationals and, yep, like, you know, different things like that. And I'm like, well, there's got to be some really funny ones.
And then there's always like the silent treatment ones are good, like for guys first.
Oh,
they didn't do that for Badu, but I remember Otani's first one. You know, he comes into the dugout and he just eventually had to jump on Ian Kinsler's back, like, Ian, I did it. And then, yeah, and then they all mobbed him.
They all mobbed him. Yeah, that one's cute too. So I don't know. I thought that he's screaming at a waffle maker. I think he was just really pumped to get that waffle maker, as I would be too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely. It's good times. Are we going to talk sad baseball? Was that you're going to segue and then we got distracted
Well, I was just going to mention, well, we're going to go into one final topic featuring our most referenced individual player here before we wrap things up.
Oh no. If we got paid for every time we mentioned Trevor Bauer on this podcast, yep.
No, we'd be doing well.
Actually make money on this podcast.
Yep, it'd be like our own personal Patreon. But we've had, let's see, James Paxton blew out his elbow today, which is not so terribly surprising. Trevor
Tommy John,
thoracic outlet surgery. He's going to have the Adam treatment and get the rib removed and all that business. And then, who is the other one? There's another big, Fernando Tatis Jr., like, he just has this ongoing shoulder problem and he threw it out of the socket or whatever happened the other day. Yeah. And they keep saying he's going to come back, but people have been talking about him needing surgery on that for like, you know, 3 or 4 years. And
hopefully not this season. I did predict him to be MVP of the NL. So I prefer that not, you know, ruin it. And obviously, like, he had such a hot year last year. You don't want to see him downed by injury so early into the new season. It was tough. I mean, we saw tons of injuries in spring training, especially for the Blue Jays.
So many pitcher ones though. Like, we didn't have that many Tommy Johns. I was kind of noticing, like, you know, because you just start waiting and then I didn't want to say anything because then you jinx it. Mm-hmm. But now those are coming too. But yeah, we did have a bunch of get position players just get wrecked in strange ways as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually, I'm not totally surprised by the new turn towards Tommy John, because I think we're seeing a real uptick in velo across the board for pitchers this year.
Yeah. Even like Casey Mize throwing 97, 98, like that was not supposed to happen.
Which part of me wonders if it's related to the ball, because like they talked about deadening the ball.
Yeah.
I think we're still seeing a pretty significant number of home runs, but
they also talked about lightening it. Yeah. Like it was going to be a little lighter.
What they talked about, and I noticed that Blake Snell talked about this ahead of the season, is that he mentioned that the stitches were lower. that it felt different in his hand.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's a firmer grip because of the lowered stitches that's, you know, equaling a higher velocity. But it's interesting to see, because it does, we're seeing tons of pitchers who's had really strong velo drops last year.
Yeah.
Including random guys like Sean Doolittle.
Right.
Have had this incredible uptick in their velocity. So I think that that's kind of an interesting thing to focus on and see kind of what happens there.
Yeah. And there's so, I mean, there's just such an uncomparable, you know, factor in there with so many, you know, most guys only pitched, you know, 50, 60 innings last year at most. And a lot of them didn't pitch at all. And no one really knows how that's going to respond. Like, there's this emphasis, like, oh, there's going to be all these injuries because of that. But maybe for a bunch of veteran guys who have gone, you know, 10, 15 years, you know, throwing baseballs at max velocity for 7 or 8 months out of the year, maybe like having, you know, all that time off, you know, will be better for them in some ways. It was nice to see Drew Smyly finally looking healthy again. He pitched well for the Braves the other day. He's back, and he's looked really good the last couple of years every time he's out there, but he just has not been able to pitch. He's been like James Paxton. Like, he just has not been able to stay out there. So yeah, that's been kind of a bummer so far, but maybe compared to the usual stuff, not, you know, just sort of as is, you know, that's unfortunately just the way baseball goes. But yes, that will bring us to our favorite
baseball villain.
Yeah. Our favorite topic, but maybe our favorite topic is the one we got called out for in the SB Nation channel earlier today, because Danny Russell from D-Rays made notice our Anya Taylor-Joy tribute podcast, and he was like, what is this thirst fest going on here? What was that? She is one of our favorite topics, but not yet a baseball topic. We'll see.
No. But yeah, let's talk a little Trevor Bauer, because ahead of this season, there was a ruling kind of released by MLB saying that they were kind of going to really crack down on foreign substances.
Yeah.
So anything wherein a pitcher was using pine tar or anything to create a stickier grip on the ball, they were really not having it. Like, there would be punishment in those cases. Like, it just was not allowed, outright stated, can't do it. Before, it was kind of like, well, you guys really shouldn't. But now they're being pretty serious about it. And I think the funniest part of that was immediately after they asked it, in the subtlest way possible, Trevor Bauer's agent, Rachel Luba, said, what about players who are already using it? Are they grandfathered in?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, she claims, I think, in follow-up tweets to that, that it was meant to be like, what about pitchers who are already in like the Hall of Fame or have retired, were busted using it? But we all, I think, kind of know what she was really talking about, because over the past day or two, several balls, I guess only one day, not pitching on multiple days, I know how starting pitchers work, but several
we're just not exact. I can't remember exactly which day Trevor pitched.
Yeah.
It was either a day ago or 2 days ago.
But several of his balls, like, I can't say that sentence in
his balls were too sticky. That's what you're trying to say.
Fuck. several of the active game balls that he used were taken for additional testing.
Yeah.
And it was never explained precisely why. And we haven't yet kind of seen what the outcome of that is, but we have to assume, I think, that that's related to this crackdown on substance use.
Yeah.
And
we'll see this proposed crackdown. We'll see if it actually plays out, but yeah.
What is especially funny about that, I think, is how much crap Trevor Bauer gave the Astros specifically
for
using substances to increase their spin rate. And then pretty much said last year he was using substances to increase his spin rate.
Well, I think it was it 2019 or 2018? There was one start where he basically, he must have used something, because his four-seam spin rate went up like 400 RPMs for one game, and then it went right back down to normal.
Yeah.
And people look at that data, you know, the spin data in every single game, and so it obviously stood out, and he wouldn't quite confirm, but he was sort of like, oh, you know, just tried a little experiment with something, you know, that game or whatever. So, and he used that to kind of point out like how much of a difference, you know, that was his point. That was his whole way of doing it, is that he was trolling the league, like, oh, you know, a lot of guys are doing this and it's cheating. Meanwhile, all of baseball is like, yes, we're well aware. you dork. Like, how do, because everyone has always used this. And this is the, this is the place where I'm really not thrilled with MLB over this, because, you know, people have always used stuff to get a better grip. And as long as you're not like actually loading up the ball, no one has cared. And there are a whole host of famous hitters on record saying they prefer pitchers to have a good grip because they don't get hit as often. They know where the ball is going. And as long as it's all a level playing field, you're good to go. You know, it doesn't really matter that much. And this is why I had to write a piece about the unwritten rules this offseason from back in January, kind of about this, because MLB leaves all these things vague. And then when you go to enforce it, you can't then enforce it fairly, because what they've basically said is they're going to be looking for weird variations in spin rate, like guys whose spin rate pops. But what about, you know, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, Clayton Kershaw, like all these high spin rate guys who've been dominant for, you know, 15 years, apparently they're going to get grandfathered in. They're going to crack down on just, you know, the younger players or just the players whose spin rate changes dramatically. I don't, the whole thing just seems like a complete cluster waiting to happen. And I have to laugh that it's Trevor Bauer first getting popped for this, because the whole thing almost feels like it was all set up just to bring him down specifically for being the person who brought it up in the first place and made such a show of it. And then, you know, eventually decided like, well, if you can't beat him, I guess I've got to beat him too. And now they're like, oh, you're popped. You know, you're the one in trouble.
I think so, my favorite comment I've seen on it so far was somebody in our
Slack. It happened to a nicer guy, obviously, but it's still, you know, it's still shady in my opinion.
But I do like that the comment somewhere in our Slack chat today was just like, he's going to come out, if something happens, he's going to come out and like try to something. So I feel like that's the next step.
Right.
But like,
he's got documents that you people won't believe. You know, we've heard enough of this stuff. I mean, we'll see how that plays out. Like, one of the things about it too is that it sounds like unless they catch you in the act, like it's going to be pretty hard to get the union to just let them punish you. So I'd be surprised if he gets punished. This is probably just sort of a message sent type of a thing, but hilarious. Like the dude wants to be in the center of all these things, and he always is. So
it could be a fines thing too, right? Yeah. Like it could be, they can enforce a fine, I think, a lot more easily than you can enforce a suspension or anything like that. And he's already demonstrated that he gets fined over all sorts of ludicrous nonsense, like design and wearing his own branded t-shirt where the brand symbol was visible underneath the jersey. He got fined for that too. And he loves to point out those. I mean, that is pretty ludicrous.
It is. Like, it's pretty weak.
I think it's pretty funny. Like, guys are allowed to flash their Nike on their or their Under Armour, but you can't flash, you know, your own brand design. Like, give me a break on that one. That one's pretty stupid.
Pretty soft.
But I could see them being all like, you know, here's a $5,000 fine because you had a foreign substance on the baseball you were using. And
yeah,
you know, he's super rich now, so he doesn't care.
Yeah. He'll be fine. I mean, this is all just promotion for him. You know, I mean, you know, when you're a troll, you know, that's how you roll until something really happens to, you know, to actually like cause you, you know, real trouble. So
talk about guys who lean into the villain role.
Yep, absolutely. And the, you know, and the weird thing about the ball too is that they said they were going to do all this stuff and try to, you know, lighten it and lower the seams so that I thought they were going to raise the seams so that there'd be more drag and the backspin off the bat would fly higher and you wouldn't have these sort of like soaring knuckleballs, because that's sort of the thing Meredith Wills in particular figured out, was that it was the tight low seams. You know, they're just less drag, and so the ball flies farther. But I haven't really—I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen anything to suggest that they actually managed to do this. And I don't think anyone in baseball trusts Rawlings or anybody to, like, you know, make some minute changes that will take like 5 to 10 feet off the average ball flight. You know, they probably butcher it, and the thing will just be like, you know, just dying like a shot quail in the outfield. You know, off the bat of Nelson Cruz, 120 miles per hour, and then it just dies. So they probably just left it alone. I mean, they haven't been able to come up with the tacky cover that would, you know, make the whole, okay, we're going to ban the pine tar and the fingers thing, you know, more viable. And they haven't shown any sign of being able to control the ball flight. And I'm almost scared for them to just mess with these things. But once again, all these things just seem like self-imposed wounds by MLB, because no one was complaining about any of these things. Like no one wanted these changes. You know, what we want is, you know, the game to be played a little bit faster, not for you to, you know, put ghost runners on second in the 10th inning, ban the shift and do all this, you know, kind of silliness. Our buddy Jake Kostick from the Red Sox SB Nation
fan. Over the monster.
That's right. I should know that one, but he was kind of saying like, maybe go, and I like this idea, like in the 10th, leave it as normal. In the 11th, you get a runner on first to start the inning. In the 12th, you get a runner on second. Like, you know, so it kind of has like this progression. It's just putting a runner on second. I think the run expectancy in that situation is like 1.1. You know, like someone's supposed to score every time there's a runner on second with no outs. And that just seems too much to like go right to that in the 10th inning.
I was watching, obviously, like I have to watch bad baseball movies. It's my job now. But I was watching Mr. Baseball yesterday, and obviously the crux of the movie is that he's playing baseball in Japan. And there is a rule, and I don't know if this is still a Nippon League rule, but after 15 innings, if the game is tied, that's done. You're done. Man. And I'm like, you know, I wouldn't be mad. I would not be mad if there was like, after you've done 15 innings, you're done. You know what I mean? Like 15 inning game is long.
Yeah, tie is fine for me in that situation. The game has been like 6 hours by then, probably.
Yeah. So I think at a certain point, you got to be able to say enough is enough. And yeah, a walk off would be super fun here, but also it's almost 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Let's go home.
Right. All these fans came to the game and have to work in the morning and they paid to see the whole game. So bam, we're just done. I mean, I would be okay with that.
There used to be, and I have to recall if I'd like, I have to look it up, but I believe there used to be a National League rule where like a tied game could not continue after 1 a.m.
Oh, really?
I think that used to be the rule. Obviously it's not now, but I think that used to be the way it was done. And like, you'd have to resume it later as part of a doubleheader or whatever it was, but the gameplay had to stop if it extended to 1 a.m.
Well, and there used to be like different TV rules where it was like, you know, like a lot of television stations would just go off the air around 2 or 3 a.m, you know, back pre-cable. So maybe that was, you know, kind of part of the problem is that they wouldn't even be able to broadcast it. So it was like, well, all right.
Well, and I mean, like afternoon games back in the day, like we're talking old baseball, you'd have to stop playing when it got dark. Like,
yeah.
There were hard stops that you had to respect. And so I think that, I mean, it's not going to solve all pace of play issues, but I think you have to put something in place to like stop the nonsense, because otherwise you're burning through your whole bench, you're burning through your whole bullpen, you know, absurd position player pitching situations happening. And it's just,
and especially right now. Yeah. And especially right now with, you know, just the concerns about travel and everything else, and concern about like pitcher fatigue because they didn't pitch as much last year. Like it does. I suppose it does all make sense. We did get our own position player pitching.
Yeah, we did.
Castro, who got Nelson Cruz on a flyout to the warning track and actually had one of the better innings of that particular game where the Twins just kind of wrecked us in that one, I think. So
that was a 0 ERA. Bless him.
Yep. That was awesome. And we've also, the other little thing that we should mention as far as like the little pageantry of the game is one Mr. Derek Holland, who is now in the bullpen and came to camp with a WWE belt and a UHF belt, I think, like two wrestling belts, which he gave out to, you know, the stars of each game. And then I guess they get to pick, you know, the next game's stars between the position players and the pitchers. And that's a fun like little bonding exercise. And that's the kind of thing you'd like to see, you know, a wacky veteran reliever whose nickname is the Dutch Oven come in and do for your club. So, yeah.
Yeah, I liked that. Matt Boyd got it in the first game and he was showing it off. And I'm like, that's cute. I like that. That's a good clubhouse energy kind of thing.
Yeah, that's the fun stuff. And yeah, and everybody seems, you know, really fired up for Bidou. There's been no like, oh, that's the guy coming to get my job. This team does seem like they're having a good time and playing pretty loose. The lineup is, you know, deeper, if not, you know, stand out better than we've seen the past couple years. And the starting pitching is pretty good. And if the bullpen stays healthy, like, could be pretty fun. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm enthused. I think this year I'm a bit more excited than I have been. I think I'm more excited even than I was in spring training. I'm just like, all right, this is watchable. It's mm-hmm. very watchable baseball, and I hope it stays that way.
Yeah. There's a bunch of fun guys, a bunch of fun stories, and we'll be bringing it all to you all season long. So we'll wrap it up here, and probably be back next week or maybe the week after. I don't know. You guys know how we roll. Maybe I'll try to scrounge up a guest, or I'll make Ashley hassle everyone at Fangraphs and demand Eric Long and have him come on with me at some point. I don't know if we can get Kevin Goldstein, but we could quiz him about Carlos Correa. Like, what's Carlos Correa's makeup really like? I need a grade.
Well, I'm in a Slack channel with him now, so.
Yeah. Ask him about that for me, would you please?
I'll get right
once
on
you're,
that.
Once you're established. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, give me longer than a week. Yep. I've written 2 articles for them. I think we need to, like, hold off a little bit before I start asking personal favors.
Yep, fair enough. All right, so we'll call it good for tonight, and we'll get back to you guys shortly. Hopefully Tigers will have a good week. This is going to be kind of a tough road trip, so if things are going to go south early in the season, it's probably going to happen pretty soon. And if things are going to go good, they're going to have a great road trip, and we're all going to be like, oh, they're coming home, and
yeah, you
know, they've got a 600 record. This is awesome. So
we can dream.
Yeah, there it goes. So, all right, we'll talk to you all later. Thanks for joining us tonight, and yeah, we'll talk to you all later. Ashley, have a good evening.
Good night.
Good night.